evening, my friends. Good evening and welcome. You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Whelan. Very excited to have you with us here tonight. It is Monday, May 28th, 2007, about 11 p.m. here in the Central Time Zone. Happy Memorial Day to all of you. And, yes, so we are live this evening. And I know a lot of you are probably out doing things, maybe, or maybe you're just coming home from doing things, or maybe you're done for the day. I don't know. A lot of people celebrate Memorial Day in different ways. Some people do barbecue. Some people shoot off fireworks. Some people just get sloppy drunk and watch television. I don't know. Whatever it is that you may have done to celebrate, I appreciate you joining us here tonight. Welcome to all of you listening on shortwave at frequency 3.215. Welcome to all of you listening online at republicbroadcasting.org. Our website, of course, franklyspeakingradio.com, and our phone number, as always, 800-313-9443. Toll-free and worldwide, 1-800-313-9443. So, here we are. It's Monday. It's Memorial Day. And, well, you know, like I said, a lot of people celebrate it in different ways, perhaps forgetting the overall intent of the whole day, which is, of course, to remember. To remember all those who have served, all those who have certainly lost their lives as a result of service to this country, and certainly appreciate all of you out there, all of you veterans, because there are many, many, many of you out there who listen to the show, and I appreciate it, each and every one of you. Obviously, I come from a military family, so it's very, holidays like this one, very important to me. I don't usually do much. I usually end up working today, obviously, of course. But at the same time, I always make sure to call family and whatnot and, you know, appreciate all the things that we have. You know, military service is a weird thing. Obviously, I've never served myself. Although, you know, if there's a draft on the way, that might change because I'm certainly draftable in age. But at the same time, I do understand the lifestyle because I did grow up in it. And as I said, pretty much everybody in my family has served in the military, with the exception of myself. And I've stated my reasons many, many times. I'll state them again. When I graduated high school, Bill Clinton was in office, and no interest in. I don't know. To me, as a military person serving under Bill Clinton, that just kind of felt a little wrong to me. You know what I mean? And that was before I knew the things I knew, or knew the things I know, I should say. It's a more accurate way to say it. Looking back on it, you know, you say, well, here's a guy, he's a draft dodger. You know, what kind of president, what kind of commander-in-chief is this guy going to be? And, you know, he was miserable. But they've all been miserable, haven't they? And maybe you feel differently about it, especially if you've served. I mean, that's really the amazing thing about that sort of lifestyle choice, in my mind, is that you join to serve the purpose, not to serve the man. Because odds are you're going to be in the service a lot longer than the span of one president, or maybe you'll be in there for several presidents. It just depends. It is a choice to serve the country, not to serve the president. And when presidents come and go, military men and women continue on. And they always have, and I know that they always will. And I appreciate each and every one of you out there for all the things that you've done for us. And a lot of people would look at situations like Iraq and Afghanistan and the war on terror and say, they're not fighting for our freedoms. Yes, they are. They are. That's why they're fighting. That's not why they were sent there. There's a very, very different rationale, I think, behind it. And, of course, George W. Bush out there doing his photo opportunities today, as he should, honestly. I mean, can you imagine the kind of outrage there would be if the president did not do these things on Memorial Day? I mean, people would be angry, as well they should be. So he did his required appearance and gave his speech, which, well, we'll cover it here in our first hour a little bit as far as the news and different things like that. And then second hour, our special guest, as always, Grant Hall, will be joining us to talk about his book, Privacy Crisis. Please stay with us, folks. We're back in 3 minutes with more Frankly Speaking Radio.
The ideology powering the Democrats and Republicans is not liberalism or conservatism, but globalism. Globalists are concerned with what's good for big business and the American empire instead of what's fair for the American people. The only antidote to the poison of globalism is nationalism. Start reading the Nationalist Times each month. The Nationalist Times promotes a common sense, intelligent, and passionate alternative to the reigning party line. Published monthly since 1985, the Nationalist Times is a 20-page newspaper featuring outstanding writers and columnists who don't believe in taboos or sacred cows. Be one of the many thousands of loyal readers of the Nationalist Times. Subscribe now to the Nationalist Times. Just $19 for 1 year. That's 50% off the regular price. Send your $19 subscription to the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. That's the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. Or subscribe online at our website, www.anu.org.
People who use Cartivite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartivite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartivite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartivite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, 2 months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartivite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Whalen. Welcome back. And again, happy Memorial Day to all of you out there, not just those who it applies to, of course, who did the hard work and everything, but to all of you who are out there appreciating these freedoms that we have and appreciate, I hope that you do, appreciate all those who have served past, present, and future, who have ensured that we can do these things. We can do these things that we do now. Now, a great amount of time is spent in talk radio complaining about things, complaining about all the problems and all the things that are out there, and that's true. But be cognizant of one thing, we do have that right to complain, and that's why we have it, is because of the sacrifices of heroes, honestly. So here we go, Associated Press today. President George W. Bush paid tribute Monday to America's troops, calling them, quote, a new generation of fallen leaders, end quote, in a solemn Memorial Day visit to the National Burial Ground for War Heroes. It just doesn't sound right, does it? A new generation of fallen leaders. I don't know. We'll get into the details, I suppose, of things that he said. Speaking under overcast skies and laying a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknowns and meeting privately at the White House with the families of some fallen servicemen and women, Mr. Bush called the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan a part of the nation's destiny. He said they follow a rich tradition of similar American sacrifices throughout the country's history. That is sort of an abysmal connection to make, don't you think? Iraq and Afghanistan are part of our destiny, and they are a rich tradition of similar sacrifices throughout the country's history. So sacrifices for what? For gain? For oil? Because none of us are really seeing the results. And that's moderately problematic. And again, if it were anybody else speaking these words, I think they'd be fine. If it were any other circumstances under which the words are being spoken, I think they'd be fine. But they ring a little hollow coming from George W. Bush. Speaking of the more than 368,000 buried through history at Arlington National Cemetery, Mr. Bush said, quote, "Nothing said today will ease your pain, but each of you needs to know our country thanks you and we embrace you and we will never forget the terrible loss you have suffered. The greatest memorial to our fallen troops cannot be found in any words we say or in the places we gather. The more lasting tribute is all around us," end quote. And that's, like I said, very well said. Obviously, somebody put a lot of time into that speech, and it wasn't the president. I can guarantee you that. But at the same time, it does apply, and we must understand that, any commander-in-chief who speaks words like that, it's coming from somebody else. But they're good words, nevertheless. Goes on, a man holding a sign that said, "Bring home our troops," stood at the bridge as Bush's motorcade traveled over the Potomac on its way to the cemetery. Troops with rifles fitted with bayonets stood at attention as his motorcade drove through rows of white tombstones, each marked with a tiny American flag. Smoke from cannon fire rose over the cemetery. Bush laid a wreath of red, white, and blue flowers at the Tomb of the Unknowns and stood, his hand covering his heart, during a drum roll and taps. First Lady Laura Bush stood nearby with relatives of fallen troops. In his speech, Mr. Bush said the freedoms that people enjoy in this country today, quote, "came at a great cost, and they will survive only so long as there are those who are willing to protect them," end quote. Very true. The president said that even after 4 years, many young men and women still volunteer for the U.S. Armed Forces, saying, quote, "We have heard of 174 Marines recently, almost a quarter of a battalion, who asked to have their enlistments extended. They want to serve their nation," end quote. That's typical politician stuff, and we've seen that certainly. I don't know. I've just noticed it probably in the last 10 years or so, a lot of politicians saying, "I was in small town USA and I talked to Joe, and Joe's a cab driver, and Joe had this to say about his country and why he loves it." You know, stuff like that, where they're trying to bring home the human angle. But obviously, again, it's kind of like going to a psychiatrist. You know they care about you because they're being paid to care about you. And you know that Bush seems to care, or presidents in general seem to care, right? Because that's what their job is. And, of course, they're trying to make it seem like they're out there interacting with the general public on a regular basis, which I understand that, you know, that time permitting is not necessarily always an option. But at the same time, when you wall yourself in on this house on the hill, you really have no comprehension of everyday life. And coming out and making the rounds once or twice every couple of months is really not indicative of having a feeling of the pulse of the nation. Anyway, Bush went on to say, quote, "Those who serve are not fatalists or cynics. They know that one day this war will end, as all wars do. Our duty is to make sure this war was worth the sacrifice and the fighting men and women succeed, where tyrants and terrorists are frustrated and foiled, where our nation is more secure from attack. This is our country's calling. It is our country's destiny," end quote. So again, very pretty words, but at the same time, he's saying that people who serve are fatalists or cynics. I think that's absolutely, I don't know if anybody would say that. Why would you be a fatalist? Like, oh, well, I want to die. I might as well join the military. I don't know if anybody's saying that, or those who say, oh, well, I don't have any options available to me. I'll just join the military. It's not like that. And I know that it gets painted that way to a great extent, especially by those looking to pursue a draft, saying, hey, we need to normalize things. We need to get into a situation where it's not just the poor and the underprivileged who are serving, who are choosing this line of work. I disagree with that wholeheartedly. Because think about it. If you're poor, if you're unfortunate, if you're disenfranchised, whatever the case may be, wouldn't it be easier to sit around and do nothing and just collect unemployment? Absolutely it would. Rather than going and being shot at and all that, that's not, it's not the lack of options. It's not the people who have no better options who are joining the service. It's people who try to make themselves into a better situation. And I also think that the freedoms and whatnot that we have, and the reason why people join the military, I think it's more ingrained in the people who are regular, average, everyday American citizens, rather than those who are privileged and have everything handed to them. They don't know the definition of freedoms because they've never had to suffer, because they've never had to go without something, because they've never been told that you have this for a purpose. They've been told you have this because you're better than everyone else. It's a completely different mindset, and that's why you have different people, I think, joining the service than the people who would push for a draft would say something completely different. But again, the people who mostly would push for a draft are people who probably don't know what it's like to grow up probably like you did and like I did. So Bush went on to say, they know that one day this war will end, as all wars do. Yeah, they do. But when it's a war on terror, it doesn't necessarily end. So I don't know. For him bringing up those 174 Marines, out of how many? And we'll talk about that. Anyway, Bush said, quote, on this day of memory, we mourn brave citizens who laid their lives down for our freedom. May we always honor them. May we always embrace them. May we always be faithful to who they were and what they fought for, end quote. I agree with that. Let us really, truly be faithful to who they were and what they fought for, not what they were told they were being fought for. Because they are fighting for our freedoms, but they weren't sent there to fight for our freedoms. There is a distinct difference that has to be pointed out, I believe. Story concludes, at least 3,452 members of the U.S. military have died since the beginning of the war in Iraq in March of 2003, according to an Associated Press count. At least 325 members of the U.S. military have died in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Uzbekistan as a result of the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan in late 2001, according to the Defense Department. So, take those statistics, leave those statistics, whatever you feel about it. It is what it is, but who knows? Let's take a look at this story, because I think it is very important to offer this one up on Memorial Day as well, because this somewhat, I think, in my opinion, what little I know, you can go ahead and say, hey, everybody fighting in Iraq disagrees, or everybody in Iraq is so shielded from reality that they all are gung-ho about the whole thing. I think this paints a different picture on both sides of that, because I don't think there's any way to really lump everyone together into one category and say everybody feels this way or everybody feels that way. It's from the New York Times, and it came out today. It says, Staff Sergeant David Safstrom does not regret his previous tours in Iraq, not even a difficult second stint when two comrades were killed while trying to capture insurgents. He said, quote, in Mosul in 2003, it felt like we were making the city a better place. There was no sectarian violence. Saddam was gone, and we were tracking down the bad guys. It felt awesome, end quote. But now on his third deployment in Iraq, he's no longer a believer in the mission. The pivotal moment came, he says, this February, when soldiers killed a man setting a roadside bomb. When they searched the bomber's body, they found identification on him. And he happened to be a sergeant in the Iraqi army. He said, quote, I thought, what are we doing here? Why are we still here? End quote. Sergeant Safstrom is a member of the Delta Company of the 1st Battalion of 325th Airborne Infantry, 82nd Airborne Division. He said, quote, we're helping the guys that are trying to kill us. We help them in the daytime. They turn around at night and try to kill us, end quote. His views are echoed by most of his fellow soldiers in Delta Company, renowned for its aggressiveness. So there you have an example of someone who is over there serving and happy to do so. He's certainly a believer in the cause, not the cause, of course, of the elites, but the cause of the U.S. military, trying to better society, trying to secure a place where other people can enjoy freedoms as well. You know, as he said, in Mosul, you know, trying to make it a better place, a place where people don't have to walk outside and be scared they're going to be killed or captured or kidnapped or blown up or shot at. And he felt at one point that it was something. But then he realized that one of the people they were training for the Iraqi army was an insurgent. And these are common stories, folks. We've heard this many, 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 many times. And apparently it is an epidemic over there. Because here you've got a situation where you say to someone, hey, why don't you join our Iraqi army? And Iraqis are going to join. We don't know the screening process that they go through, and we also don't know where their loyalties lie. We also don't know where the loyalties lie of those who would command the army and send them to different places to do different things. So we'll come back here after this short 3-minute break, and we will continue on with this story and more. Frankly Speaking Radio, please stay with us. Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advised others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously. Live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
All right, employees, listen up. Our group health insurance premium just went up again. In fact, it's doubled in the last 4 years, and now we've been forced to try something new. So we're increasing the annual deductible from $500 to $2,500. Okay, cut the moaning. The good news is you'll all still only have to pay your regular $500 deductible. The company is installing a new health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA plan, that will pay up to $2,000 in benefits only to those employees who have deductible expenses. This new HRA plan is saving us a lot of money.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents' HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Military veteran right there, Jimi Hendrix, ladies and gentlemen. Amazing stuff. Absolutely amazing stuff. So, we were talking about this story from the New York Times, which came out today here on Memorial Day. Very apropos, I think, insofar as to say that here you've got a... Yeah, it's the New York Times, so, they might be looking to paint this thing in a certain way. The media always does focus things in a certain manner, and that's what they do. Now, a lot of people would say, the media is just trying to paint a negative view of the war. Of course they are, because negativity sells, positivity does not. So, in that regard, it also suits the agenda of the powers that be, because the more they make the war look like it's going badly, the more they can secure their candidate for 2008, the more they can secure funding for something we can't walk away from. A catch-22, right? We can't stay in our current situation, but we can't leave it, you know, altogether, because certainly it would be a problem. But, you know, often we hear about politicians saying, I'm going to talk to the men on the scene and see what they have to say. I'm going to talk to the generals. I'm going to talk to the analysts and see what they have to say. Well, here are some people who are on site giving quotes. It says, a small minority of Delta Company soldiers, the younger and more recent enlistees in particular, seem to still wholeheartedly support the war. Others are ambivalent, torn between fear of losing more friends in battle, longing for their families, and a desire to complete their mission. With few reliable surveys of soldiers' attitudes, it is impossible to simply extrapolate from the small number of soldiers in this company. But in interviews with more than a dozen soldiers in this 83-man unit over a one-week period, most said they were disillusioned by repeated deployments, by what they saw as an abysmal performance of Iraqi security forces, and by a conflict that they considered a civil war, one that they had no ability to stop. So there you have another issue which comes into play, obviously. So, you know, we've been told, and Bush actually said it, I believe it was last week, that if the Iraqi government asked us to leave, we would leave. But again, they have no interest in us leaving. Why? Because quite simply, we can do all the necessary stuff that needs to be done and perpetuate the civil war, which perpetuates more American money and more American time, effort, and bloodshed. To a people that obviously not too appreciative of it. And, you know, it's not to say that the Iraqi people in general are unappreciative, but at the same time, you know, it's not our fight. When you have freedom handed to you, you don't appreciate it. It's much like we talked about just a few minutes ago about the elites not appreciating freedoms because they've never had to worry about it. Well, here you've got Saddam, a tyrant, granted, but certainly an efficient one. I mean, you didn't have these kinds of problems, presumably, under Saddam with, you know, sectarian violence and whatnot. He kept a firm grip on everything, which is not necessarily the best way to do it. It's just a way that it was being done. But the point is if the people wanted to rise up against Saddam, then they should have done it. And then they would be appreciative of it, as opposed to what us just going in there and solving problems of the world. It's just not going to work anyway. I would just love to see a candidate with some sort of, I guess you could say a policy of non-interference, just sort of isolationist, maybe, to a certain extent, you know, get us focused back on producing our own food, producing our own manufacturing, and just closing down the borders and saying, let's just fix everything here first before we start presuming to know and presuming to care about all the problems out there in the rest of the world, because nobody's really coming to our aid, are they? All right, so the story goes on. They had seen shadowy militia commanders installed as Iraqi army officers, they said, and had come under increasing attack from roadside bombs planted within sight of Iraqi army checkpoints and had fought against Iraqi soldiers whom they thought were their allies. Said Sergeant First Class David Moore, a self-described conservative Texas Republican and platoon sergeant who strongly advocates an American withdrawal. He said, quote, in 03-04, 100% of the soldiers wanted to be there to fight this war now. 95% of my platoon agrees with me, end quote. This guy is a conservative Republican from Texas. You shouldn't, you know, if anybody should be gung-ho, it's this guy, right? You'd think, but he's not. He's advocating a withdrawal. Why? Probably because it appears to be serving no purpose, accomplishing no good. Not to say that they aren't doing good things. I'm sure that they are. I have no doubt that they are. But at the same time, what is the purpose at this point, right? We've said, oh, we'll stay there till we achieve victory. What is victory? It's never been clearly defined. We don't know. You say, well, victory is when the violence stops. The violence is never going to stop. We can't stop violence in one city, in one state, in one country, meaning here. What are we going to do in Iraq? I don't understand it. Anyway. So, Moore says it's not a question of loyalty. Sergeant Safstrom, for example, comes from a thoroughly military family. His mother and father have served in the armed forces, as have his three sisters, one brother, and several uncles. One week after the September 11th attacks, he walked into a recruiter's office and joined the Army, thinking at the time, quote, you guys want to start a fight in my backyard, I have something for you, end quote, which completely understandable. I think we all felt that way after September 11th. Wouldn't you agree? At least till we knew better. Anyway, stay with us, another break, and then we'll continue with the story and more Frankly Speaking Radio when we return in 3 minutes.
Thank you. You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
The ideology powering the Democrats and Republicans is not liberalism or conservatism, but globalism. Globalists are concerned with what's good for big business and the American empire instead of what's fair for the American people. The only antidote to the poison of globalism is nationalism. Start reading the Nationalist Times each month. The Nationalist Times promotes a common sense, intelligent, and passionate alternative to the reigning party line. Published monthly since 1985, the Nationalist Times is a 20-page newspaper featuring outstanding writers and columnists who don't believe in taboos or sacred cows. Be one of the many thousands of loyal readers of the Nationalist Times. Subscribe now to the Nationalist Times. Just $19 for 1 year. That's 50% off the regular price. Send your $19 subscription to the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. That's the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. Or subscribe online at our website, www.anu.org.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Glad you're here, folks. You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Whalen. Very excited to have you with us here tonight on this fine Memorial Day evening. This hour being brought to you by our good friends at Howard Creek Resort, featuring 9 fully equipped individual housekeeping cabins and easy access to all the fun things in the area. Of course, they call Arkansas the natural state. Maybe you knew that, maybe you did not. If you go there and you visit Howard Creek Resort on Bull Shoals Lake, you'll see why. It's absolutely beautiful, beautiful area of the state. As so much of the state is, honestly, except for a lot of the urban areas. Not a huge fan of some of those. But at the same time, the great thing about Howard Creek resort's location is that they are close to things. If you are maybe a city-fied person and you like to be where the action is, there's lots of places nearby for that. But if you want peace and calm and quiet, you'll find it right there. It's a perfect family vacation spot any time of the year, and certainly as summer approaches, we're just a couple of days out of June 1st here, folks. So a lot of people may be planning on some things, taking some trips. Consider Howard Creek Resort. You visit them on the web at www.howardcreek.com or call them toll-free at 877-253-7690. Wonderful stuff. All right. We certainly appreciate them. Ask you to support our sponsors and advertisers, folks, so we can continue to bring you these kinds of broadcasts. So anyway, back to the story from the New York Times. Again, came out earlier today. It says, in Sergeant Safstrom's view, the American presence in Iraq is futile. He said, quote, if we stayed here for 5, even 10 more years, the day we leave here, these guys will go crazy. It would go straight into a civil war. That's how it feels like we're putting a Band-Aid on this country until we leave. End quote. It's very, very possible. Their many deployments have added to the strain. After spending 6 months in Iraq, the soldiers of Delta Company have been home for only 24 hours last December when the news came of, quote, change your plans, you're going back to Iraq, end quote. Said the barrel-chested Captain Rogers of San Antonio, quote, I thought it would not be long before we could just stay on our base and act as a quick reaction force. The Iraqi security forces would be set up, end quote. It has not worked out that way. Still, Captain Rogers said their mission in Kadima has been, quote-unquote, an amazing success. Captain Rogers acknowledges the skepticism of many of his soldiers, saying, quote, our unit has already sent 2 soldiers home in a box. My soldiers don't see the same level of commitment from the Iraqi army units that they're partnered with, end quote. Yet, he insists, no crisis of morale, saying, quote, my guys are all professionals. I tell them to do something, and they do it, end quote. On April 29th, a Delta Company patrol was responding to a tip at Al-Sadr Mosque, a short distance from its base. The soldiers saw men in the distance erecting barricades that they had set ablaze, and the street emptied out quickly. Then a militia believed to be the Mahdi army began firing at them from rooftops and windows. When the battle was over, Delta Company learned that among the enemy dead were at least 2 Iraqi army soldiers that American forces had helped to train and arm. Captain Rogers admits, quote, the 29th was a watershed moment in a negative sense because the Iraqi army would not fight with us. Some actually picked up weapons and fought against us, end quote. That's the reality of the situation, folks. Honestly, think about that. You're over there, you're doing something, you feel like you're serving a purpose, doing something for the greater good, and then, of course, the people you've been, you know, talking to and working with and helping and caring about end up being your enemies. They refuse to fight with you in battle and actually fight against you at the same time. So it's pretty disheartening, I would imagine. The battle changed the attitude among his soldiers toward the war, he said. Quote, before that fight, there were a few true believers. After the 29th, I don't think you'll find a true believer in this unit. They are paratroopers. There is no question they will fulfill their mission, but they're fighting now for pride in their unit, professionalism, loyalty to their fellow soldier, and chain of command, end quote. That's why they're there at this point. They don't believe in it anymore, at least in this particular company. That's it's very, very sad that it would come to that. But that they're doing their job. They're doing their job. To Sergeant O'Flaherty, the Iraqi security forces are militias beholden to local leaders, not the Iraqi government, saying, quote, half of the Iraqi security forces are insurgents. As for his views on the war, O'Flaherty said, quote, I don't believe we should be here in the middle of a civil war. We've all lost friends over here. Most of us don't know what we're fighting for anymore. We're serving our country and our friends, but the only reason we go out every day is for each other. I don't want any more of my guys to get hurt or die. If it was something I felt righteous about, maybe. But for this country and this conflict, no, it's not worth it, end quote. So there you have a pretty interesting perspective. You've got your commanders saying, hey, look, we're professionals. We do our job, and we'll continue to do our job. And then you've got some, diehard, more or less, rookies to the whole thing who are still gung-ho, and they believe in the cause. And they're coming out of boot camp, and they're, you know, dropping all their phrases, you know, no pain, no gain, and all the other cliches that you hear a lot of. And then you've got your veterans, some only for a few years, perhaps. But they're veterans to that conflict. And they see it, and they say they just don't see the point in it. And, again, it's running to stand still, I think, at that point. Anyway, it's all part of the war on terror, ladies and gentlemen, the war on terror, okay? And that's the whole reason, the whole point of where we're at now and why we are where we are, why we have a Department of Homeland Security, why we have a certain amount of, more than a certain amount of incredible amounts of surveillance, okay, being levied against the American people in the interest of protecting us from terrorists. Well, is it working, and what is it really geared for, I guess is the best question. That may be answered with this story from CNN, came out yesterday. It says claims of terrorism represented less than 0.01% of charges filed in recent years in immigration courts by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, according to a report issued Sunday by an independent research group. This comes despite the fact that the Bush administration has repeatedly asserted that fighting terrorism is the central mission of the Department of Homeland Security. Now, 0.01% of the charges filed in immigration courts by the Department of Homeland Security involve claims of terrorism. That is abysmal, folks, because that, obviously the conclusion you're going to come to when you hear a statistic like that is twofold. You're going to say either they're not actually getting terrorists, or you know, there isn't a terrorism issue. There isn't a huge problem that warrants this kind of department, I guess you could say. Anyway, the Transactional Records Action Clearinghouse. That's a weird name, huh? The Transactional Records Action Clearinghouse said it analyzed millions of previously undisclosed records obtained from the immigration courts under the Freedom of Information Act. Of the 814,073 people charged by DHS in immigration courts during the last 3 years, 12 faced charges of terrorism, according to TRAC. TRAC, again, Transactional Records Action Clearinghouse. 800 plus 1,000 people, only 12 with charges of terrorism. Whether or not they actually are warranted, meaning the terrorism charge, whether it sticks or not is a different issue altogether. But these are just ones that the claim has even been raised. It says those 12 cases represent 0.0015% of the total number of cases filed. That's astounding. Said David Burnham, a TRAC spokesman, quote, "The DHS claims it is focused on terrorism. Well, that's just not true. Either there is no terrorism or they're terrible at catching them. Either way, it's bad for all of us," end quote. Excellent, excellent point. And that is the main point, really. Because presumably, why do we continue to fight in Iraq and all these other places? Well, again, the politicians will tell you something, and certainly we hear it echoed by a lot of the servicemen and women out there. We're fighting them over there so they don't come over here. Okay? But they're not coming over here. So what does that mean? That it's effective to be over there? I don't see that really. Because honestly, if you think about it, if you are an insurgent and you're wanting to cause some problems, you're wanting to cause some terror, right? Let's say that that's the case. Well, you're one person. How much good are you going to be able to do against an armed unit of the U.S. military on site in your neighborhood? Very, very little. You might be able to be a part of some little shootout. You might maybe take somebody down, but inevitably you're going to die. Well, supposedly 19 hijackers were able to perpetrate September 11th. Thousands of deaths, certainly a complete change in our policies as far as domestic and foreign, a complete change in the way we view terrorism, and a complete and total beginning of a police state. But yet that police state is not capturing terrorists. So what are we saying? That the terrorists say, well, since the U.S. military is over here in Iraq, you know, in fact, almost all of them are over here in the Middle East, let's go to where they are and fight them there? No. If their rationale held out, that we go over there so that way they won't come over here, if all of our troops are over there in Iraq or somewhere in the Middle East, wouldn't the logical choice be to come here to America and perpetrate some terror? Yes, it would. So that begs this question. Either there is no terrorism, or the Department of Homeland Security is terrible at catching terrorists. Either way, as he says, it's bad for all of us. That's from David Burnham, a TRAC spokesman who did this. They did this research. It says the TRAC analysis also found that DHS filed a minuscule number of what they called quote-unquote national security charges against people in immigration courts. The report stated that 114, or 0.014% of the total of roughly 800,000 individuals charged were charged with national security violations, which we don't even know what that is. What does that mean, right? According to the report by TRAC, which is affiliated with Syracuse University, the results show there is, quote, an apparent gap between DHS rhetoric about its role in fighting terrorism and what it has actually been doing, end quote. DHS spokesman Russ Knott called the TRAC report, quote unquote, ill-conceived, and said the group, quote, lacked a grasp of the DHS mission, end quote. Well, why don't you clarify it for us then, right? If they don't understand, give us some understanding. Help us to understand why 0.00, let me get the actual number here, 0.0015%, 12 cases out of 800,000 plus have anything to do with terrorism. Give us an idea, Russ Nock of the Department of Homeland Security. He said that by clamping down on all forms of immigration, DHS has made it difficult for terrorists to come to the United States. Really? Because there's still 800,000 plus charges of immigration violation. And how many do we see in crossing the border on a regular basis? How many times do we hear stories of the, 12 to 25 million illegal immigrants in America? And he's saying that DHS is doing such a great job of cracking down on illegal immigration that they're obviously catching all the terrorists or preventing terrorists from coming through. Not true, sir. Absolutely not true. And especially when you look at an amnesty type of situation, well, there you go. That's 25 million people that have one business day to do a background check on somebody. And, of course, if they can't find any reason to deny it, they will simply authorize it. And then there you go. Just like in 1993, the World Trade Center bombing, that came out. One of the people was involved with that, was a recipient of the 1986 amnesty plan. So obviously it's not going to work, and obviously people have an agenda to be a sleeper cell, presumably, in this country for a lengthy period of time. Now, that is whether you believe in foreign terrorism or not. It's still an issue, and it does mean that the Department of Homeland Security, which is spending, probably millions, billions of dollars, who knows, for their anti-terrorism efforts, what are they actually accomplishing? What are they involved with? Obviously immigration, but not to a great extent and not very thoroughly. So the question remains, if it's not an immigration case, could it be terrorists, right? Because not all terrorists, presumably, are going to be immigrants. You would say, well, maybe some people in the United States, U.S. citizens, maybe they're terrorists. Maybe the Department of Homeland Security needs to focus on them. Well, according to this story today from the Associated Press, that's what Alabama is doing. Listen to this. The Alabama Department of Homeland Security has taken out a website it operated that included gay rights and anti-war organizations in a list of groups that could include terrorists. So the Department of Homeland Security seems to think it more likely that the terrorists would be domestic rather than foreign. Now, granted, Alabama not necessarily on the border of Mexico, so you can understand that. But at the same time, doesn't that sort of shift the focus a little bit? And this should not be any new revelation to any of you. It should not be a revelation to anyone in America. Because when you go to an airport, the heightened security measures that you endure in order to conveniently fly from one place to another, including getting there several hours early, having to strip down, take off your shoes, have all your stuff sorted through, all that jazz, is to make you safe, right? No, absolutely not. Think about it. They're not doing that to find terrorists. They're doing that presuming that you yourself might be a terrorist. I've seen children having to take off their shoes and getting patted down. Children! And parents are okay with that. Oh, yeah, that's fine. Oh, yeah, she's not a terrorist, but go ahead, pat her down. I know she's a newborn, but go ahead and search her bag. And they'll say, oh, you know, the parents hide bombs in babies' strollers and things like that. Really? Where? When? How? Why? Where do you get that information from? Where's your evidence that this happens? And it's fine, I suppose, but at the same time, again, when you board an airplane, you have gone through the rigors and the humiliation of being treated as a terrorist, not as an American citizen who is being protected from terrorists. That's the difference, and that's the point of the Department of Homeland Security, is to treat citizens as potential terrorists until they deem otherwise. And again, you can always change your mind, right? So maybe you're not a terrorist Tuesday, but maybe Wednesday you say, hey, wait a minute, I object to that. Oh, you're a terrorist. Come with us. Why is the Patriot Act called Patriot? Now, I know it's it spells something out, which I don't even remember what it is anymore, something about prevention, so blah, 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 blah. But again, if you are going to crack down on, cocaine smuggling, then you might call it the Cocaine Smuggling Act, right? Because you're trying to ban smuggling of cocaine. So usually you name a bill or an act or whatever, some piece of legislation, after what it is you're trying to accomplish. Well, if you're trying to ban cocaine, you might call it the Cocaine Smuggling Act, right? You want to ban that action. Well, why would they call an anti-terrorism bill the Patriot Act? Because if you are patriotic, then you'll be an enemy. You'll be considered a potential terrorist, perhaps. The Alabama Department of Homeland Security website identified different types of terrorists and included a list of groups it believed could spawn terrorists. The list also includes environmentalists, animal rights advocates, and abortion opponents. So if you are for gay rights, if you're against the war, if you like the environment, if you like animals having rights, and if you're against abortion, you could be a terrorist, according to the Alabama Department of Homeland Security. The director of the department, Jim Walker, said his agency received a number of calls and emails from people who said they felt the site unfairly targeted certain people just because of their beliefs. He said he plans to put the website back on the internet, but will no longer identify specific types of groups, indicating that he's just going to take down that aspect of the website. He's not necessarily going to say, well, we feel differently now. You've convinced us. You've convinced us that if you care about the environment, you might not be a potential terrorist. He's not saying that. He's saying we just won't say what our source of scrutiny is going to be. That's all. So there's really no change. This is not necessarily a story of victory, but yet an enhancement of our awareness of how we are viewed in America. Yeah, take it for what it's worth. Stay with us. We'll be back in 3 minutes to finish this story and more Frankly Speaking Radio.
The ideology powering the Democrats and Republicans is not liberalism or conservatism, but globalism. Globalists are concerned with what's good for big business and the American empire instead of what's fair for the American people. The only antidote to the poison of globalism is nationalism. Start reading the Nationalist Times each month. The Nationalist Times promotes a common sense, intelligent, and passionate alternative to the reigning party line. Published monthly since 1985, the Nationalist Times is a 20-page newspaper featuring outstanding writers and columnists who don't believe in taboos or sacred cows. Be one of the many thousands of loyal readers of the Nationalist Times. Subscribe now to the Nationalist Times. Just $19 for 1 year. That's 50% off the regular price. Send your $19 subscription to the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. That's the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. Or subscribe online at our website, www.anu.org.
Hey America, how does it feel to be flushed down the toilet of political intrigue and treachery into the sewer of slavery and bondage, where perverts and the godless write the rules? Our unborn children are murdered, our esteemed elders are euthanized, and everyone in between is numbered and tracked like criminals so they can be farmed by government, credit, healthcare organizations like the chicken farmer farms his chickens. Have you had enough? Is it time to declare your liberty? It's your choice, you know. The only place to begin to declare your independence is to have enough food stored so that you never have to go stand in a bread line to give away the rest of your life or sell your children for a bowl of rice and a slice of bread. Call 800-409-5633 on the web efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
People who use Cartavite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartavite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartavite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartavite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jog 2 months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartavite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
Welcome back, my friends. Glad you're here. You are listening, of course, to Frankly Speaking Radio, tail end of hour number one already, and finishing up the story from the Associated Press. Again, it came out earlier today, and it's about the Alabama Department of Homeland Security with a website saying these particular groups domestically could spawn terrorists, and they include gay rights, anti-war, environmentalists, animal rights advocates, and abortion opponents. Now, whether you agree or disagree with that, I think that's certainly it seems to be a departure from the objective of the Department of Homeland Security, unless, of course, you take a look at it from a different point of view, which, of course, we've always done here on this show. Howard Bayless, chairman of the gay and lesbian advocacy group Equality Alabama, said he does not understand why gay rights advocates would be on the list, saying, quote, "Our group has had only peaceful demonstrations. I'm deeply concerned we've been profiled in this discriminatory matter," end quote. Which I think is a fairly valid point, folks. Have you ever seen a bunch of militant gay people running around, like, blowing stuff up? Never. I mean, abortion, anti-abortion groups, I suppose you could say, possibly, cause, you know, there have been clinics that have been blown up. There have been doctors that have been shot. Animal rights. There's the Animal Liberation Foundation or something. You know, they go and they blow up things or cause problems. I don't know. The Earth Liberation Front and Animal Liberation Front, that's what it is. So, you know, these guys are people who have caused some serious damage and done some real terrorism. But gay rights? Who's out there being gay and being a terrorist? I've never seen a gay terrorist, I don't think. I don't know if I've seen a terrorist. But anyway, I think it's a fairly good point. Anyway, the site included the groups under a description of what it calls single-issue terrorists, end quote. That group includes people who feel they are trying to create a better world, the website said. It said that in some communities, law enforcement officers consider certain single-issue groups to be a threat. So if you have a group, and your group is trying to create a better world through one issue, you might be a terrorist in a sort of Jeff Foxworthy sort of way. The website said, quote, "Single-issue extremists often focus on issues that are important to all of us. However, they have no problem crossing the line between legal protests and illegal acts to include even murder to succeed in their goals," end quote. What? That's crazy talk. I mean, I suppose that you could have an anomaly, but to make those kind of generalizations is just bizarre. Have you seen a bunch of gay people running around murdering people saying, "We demand gay rights, otherwise we're going to kill people"? What? It's just silly. Walker said the site had been set up since spring of 2004 and had gotten a relatively small number of hits until it recently became the subject of blogs, he said. Birmingham attorney Eric Johnston, president of the Alabama Pro-Life Coalition, said he was concerned about any list describing people doing social justice work as terrorists. He said, quote, "Our group's main mission is educational. The thought that we would somehow be harboring terrorists escapes me," end quote. It's a fairly astute point, folks, because that's right. So the idea that certain groups might be considered terrorists because they have a single issue. Now, I don't know what that means. So if you're like perhaps an environmentalist who wants gay rights, then you're okay because then you're a dual issue group, right? What? None of this makes any sense to me. And there's a reason for that, because none of it is supposed to make sense. And I think that when you factor in some of the other things that we'll talk about, it starts to get a more complete picture, perhaps, of what's going on. So anyway, folks, stay with us. We'll be back with hour number two here in about 90 seconds. Our special guest tonight, the author of the book Privacy Crisis, Grant Hall, will be joining us. And very, very, very important stuff. So please stick with us, and we'll see you on the other side.